years. Our track record is it takes approximately $2 million to do that. We have another station that we need to scrape and rebuild a new one. It takes approximately $3 million to do that. We have approximately $5 million left in the GO bond. We would look to, we have some projects that we have not been able to complete because of the cost of the amount of funds we had available. That would be to upgrade the logistics section, to upgrade the seismically upgrade the training section, those areas. That would free up some money to be able to do those types of bond projects. The other thing it would be able to do is give us a little bit of flexibility and to meet any of the cost increases that we don't know about yet. There are just a lot of those are we just have not done. We're in the process of doing those studies now, so we'd just be speculating.
My question is, wouldn't this be money that would augment the bond money?
Certainly the Station 18 would, yes, sir.
Yeah, and then the other project we may need to come back to council and have a discussion about in
yes,
terms
sir.
Of general
that
fund one-time money.
Yes, that is
okay.
Accurate.
Okay.
Yes.
But we don't know what that is.
Yeah. I see.
But now is the time to apply because we have a deadline now.
Gotcha. And then just, mm-hmm. I'm nearly done, the fireboat engines.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a line item in your budget for matches for that kind of equipment purchase that in the current year budget?
We have an apparatus replacement budget. The fireboat Campbell is part of our apparatus. It's 82 years old. The engines that are in there right now are 39 years old. If we're able to repower that, we may be able to get another 40 years out of that boat.
Did you say 40 or 4?
40. They are 39 years old right now. So if we're able to repower that, not only would it help the environment, but it would certainly help us. And if we could get the federal government to pay 75% of that and we have to pay 25% of that, we would do that out of our apparatus replacement budget, ma'am.
Out of your existing budget.
Yes, sir, ma'am. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
Additional discussion from council. Is anyone here that wishes to testify on these three items? Carla, can you please call the vote?
1499. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you. That was very helpful. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1499 is approved. Can you please call the vote on 1500 emergency order?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1500 is approved. Can you please call the vote for emergency ordinance 1501?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1501
Thank
is approved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chief.
Gets us to, can you please read the title for the second reading of street vacation item number 1512?
Vacate a portion of North Gay Avenue between North Blandina Street and North Wygant Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Is the vote only? Please call the vote.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
I don't support this, and I want to explain to my colleagues why. In looking at the, and giving you the context that this is something that the Planning Commission considers, and over the 7 years that I was on the Planning Commission, this was something that was very different because it's the only one that the Planning Commission does, which is a quasi-judicial hearing, and meaning that it's specific to a property, there's a particular applicant, and you either say yes or no, so that you therefore don't engage in conversation outside of the hearings with the applicant. And that the dynamics are different in a street vacation because there is an applicant who's asking for the property to be returned to them and the public's right-of-way to be taken off it. So it's very important because the right-of-way acquisitions are difficult and expensive. So if we give them up, we have problems then perhaps in developing. So looking at the aerial photograph with the topography and the lots that we were provided by staff, and thank you very much, by the way, to Teresa Talbot and Dee Walker for providing more information on this. But looking at the topography, I'm concerned that there's four vacant properties, four 5,000 square foot lots on the right of way of North Blandina, west of North Gay, that may be developed in the future. And if we say that 30 feet is adequate on a topographically challenged street to provide access to four lots, I think we could say that all streets in the city could be 30 feet in width and that more street vacations should be occurring. I'm concerned that this does set a precedent, and if the properties, those four properties were developed, I think you would need parking on the area to be vacated because of the topography, there isn't very much going to be much space on the lots. So for those reasons, I cannot support this proposed vacation. No.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. The ordinance or street vacation is approved. Can you please read the title, second reading, council calendar item 1513.
Authorized revenue bonds for the public safety system revitalization project.
Vote only. Please call the vote.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1513 is approved. Can you please read the title for purchasing report, item number 1514.
Accept bid of Shearer and Associates, Inc. for the Burlingame Tanks Improvement Project for $638,045.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Morning. I'm Christine Moody, Procurement Services. On September 22, 2009, the city received two bids for the Burlingame Tanks Improvement Project. Before you is a report recommending a contract award for the Portland Water Bureau to the low bidder in the amount of $638,045. There were eight divisions of work identified for potential minority, women, and emerging small business subcontracting opportunities. MWSB participation on this project is at 12.9%, and work is being performed in the areas of metal fabrication, welding, fencing, and crane service. I will turn this back over to council if there are any questions regarding the bidding process. And Mike Ross, the design manager from the Water Bureau, is present to answer any technical questions.
I guess I'm just curious, only two bidders? That seems pretty low.
Yes, there was only two bidders on this project.
What's your thoughts as to why?
I'm not sure. It could be because of the type of work that it is, painting on the water tanks.
Or fear of coming before council and answering questions.
Could be that too.
Any other discussion from council? All right. This is a purchasing report. Do I hear a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded to accept the purchasing report 1514. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote?
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for your good work on this. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 1514 is approved. Can you please read the purchasing report, item number 1515?
Award a contract to K&S Madison, Inc. for biosolids transports for $585,735 per year for a five-year period.
Welcome back.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. This item was before council at the October 14th council meeting, and there were specific aspects of this project that were identified as needing clarification. A memo was sent last Thursday that I hope addressed all of council's questions.
So I have some follow-up questions.
Sure.
And the reason I'm spending time on this is we basically, in my time as the sewer commissioner, came to understand that these fleet of trucks on work days are in almost constant motion. And so there's any savings that we can achieve on greenhouse gas emissions because they are in motion all the time is savings towards our climate action plan goals. So I do appreciate the memo that you wrote in response to my questions dated October 22nd. A couple of follow-up questions. I understand that the trucks will be required to meet the latest stringent EPA 2010 diesel emission standards, that the new rigs, are all the rigs new?
The rigs will be replaced in 2010, and that will be the entire fleet
Okay. That
they use for this project.
And for the record, you are?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Steve Barron. I'm the wastewater group manager for BES.
So in the end, they will be as energy efficient as the other diesel equipment that is in the city's fleet, understanding these are private fleets, that we're spending money on to retrofit as part of the EPA retrofit grants. If they meet EPA 2010, that's top of class in terms of minimization of diesel emissions.
We did ask DEQ if there would be any improvement if we retrofitted 2010 trucks, and they said there wouldn't be any improvement.
Correct. Great. And then on the question about MWSB contractors, it might just be my inability to reading the English language, but I couldn't understand the answer. Listed all the subcontractors and mentioned only one pending MWE and one pending WBE. Is that a correct reading on my part?
There are two pending WBE, Carrie Deal from Wild Horse Sampling and Deborah Shaw, who will be performing accounting and administrative services, and then a pending MBE for QO testing labs.
And then how much, then what's the percentage of MW or ESB participation?
On this particular RFP, the city process is, because this is goods and services, we do not ask them to clarify how much money they will be spending to these MWSBs, so we don't have the total from the contractor on how much money they're going to be dedicating to these services.
Okay, and unless I'm mistaken, our local business enterprise designation applies to that category, does it not? I notice we have, and I'm happy for the folks in Wasco, Oregon. I assume that's near where it's applied on the soil, but I just wanted to make sure that we have maximized local contractors and minority and women certified contractors. Do you feel confident we've done that?
I think that this contract had the highest percentage out of all the proposals that we had. So probably the type of work and the location of the work is something that plays into that.
Thank you. Additional council discussion?
I appreciate Mayor Adams and Commissioner Saltzman also contributed to this conversation the last time to reduce the emissions in the contracts. And I'm wondering, how do you know when to apply low emissions approval criteria on a particular contract, or do you do that routinely now? Because it seems like just pretty much any construction contract would have this issue in play as far as the diesel trucks and the emissions. And we have the Climate Action Plan coming later today. Is there a policy in that regard to look at that?
From what I understand, there's no policy, but what we do is, especially with the new diesel retrofit grant that the city received for construction projects, some of the sample language that was in the memo will be now included in construction contracts, because we're wanting to see what contractors will be willing to partner with the city to do some retrofits on their construction equipment, on the heavy equipment. That's what the grant's for. As far as just hauling and trucking, that's something that we work with bureaus on to understand how much of that would apply to a particular contract. And if, you know, that's something that there's a large dollar amount there, then we would apply some of that criteria as well.
So would we be allowed to add that as a criterion for deciding which bid gets the contract? Is that something that we might consider?
It would be a criteria that we could use in a request for proposal process. And that's the language that was proposed here, is when we're using a request for proposal process, that language would be included and would be evaluated. In a low bid situation, it's a little bit harder to use it as a criteria as a responsiveness issue.
But that, just to clarify, I mean, Christine said it great, but yeah, I've asked the Bureau of Environmental Services to incorporate that as a criterion when we are doing future requests for proposals for off-road heavy equipment related work.
But if I understood you correctly, we can't do that in the low bid, but then we all know that the low bid isn't necessarily, the lowest cost isn't necessarily the lowest cost if it's churning out.
Right, and with this particular area in goods and services, we have a lot more ability to use a request for proposal process as opposed to public improvement projects where we're needing to come to council to ask for an exemption in order to not use a low bid. So this is a different category of contract.
So that might be something to think about as we move forward. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other council discussion? Anyone wish to testify on item number 1515? I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the purchasing report. Carla, can you please call the vote on item 1515?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank purchasing and BES for doing a good job, being very responsive to, I think, some good questions we asked about a month ago when this was before us. But I do think you provided us very good answers in your memo, so I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Well, let it be known that we are helping the economy of Central Oregon, which needs it. Eight of the nine trucking subcontractors, where a lot of the money goes, are from Central Oregon. So I appreciate that we're spending money in Oregon. And thanks for being responsive to my questions. I appreciate it. Aye. 1515 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 1516?
Establish a pilot business retention and recruitment credit for qualifying investment management firms.
All right, get to the right place here. First, we have a Scribner error that we need to deal with. Kimberly, do you want to come forward? Terry, come forward, sorry, to help me navigate the Scribner errors. And while you're doing that, earlier this morning we had an update on the economic development strategy and some of the key challenges we face in our ability to grow the local economy and support local businesses hiring more Portlanders. The part we didn't go over today but is contained in the main report is that we have insufficient tools beyond tax increment financing to retain companies, to both retain and recruit companies, but especially to retain companies, and a substantial lack of access to investment and venture capital. The pilot before you today, business retention and recruitment credit for qualifying investment management firms, builds on the actions that City Council has taken previously to create greater tax fairness and to build in some incentives to keep businesses and some items in the toolkit to help lure businesses back. It is a pilot. We will learn from it and determine whether its expansion is warranted. I'd like to thank, of course, the Bureau of Revenue and Terry Williams and Sue Klobertanz and her team. I'd also like to thank the investment management firms who we've worked with, and we're going to hear from the Small Business Advisory Council and the Portland Business Alliance for their take on this as well. But Terry, first, what are we looking at?
I'm Terry Williams, Licensed and Tax Division Manager for the Revenue Bureau. Let me navigate you through the Scribner's error quickly. In the code, under Section C, that discussed investment management firms and what that means. Number one, it says at least 90% of the firm's gross receipt for the tax year must consist of fees that are, it's supposed to be, A, received from A without a period after it. So that's a little problem. So that's the Scribner's error that we
Unless
have.
Unless there's objection from council, we'll consider that a Scribner's error amendment without a vote. Okay,
thank
no
you.
Objections.
Okay. Let me start. I believe that, Mayor Adams, that you wanted a very quick update on the status of the past business license tax reforms that we've done, and then I'll move into the credit. Previous actions that council has taken over the last approximately 3+ years to help increase the business license tax fairness include increasing the gross receipts exemption from $25,000 to $50,000. So that's allowed lots more small and startup businesses to actually not have to pay. They still have to do some filing with us, but they don't have to pay taxes until they grow and get bigger. So that's a help to small businesses and startups. The second was increasing the owner's compensation deduction. It took a large increase up to $80,000, and now it's at $84,000, and it's continuing to increase by CPI. We've changed from just last year a paid in advance license fee to an after the fact tax. And that resulted in approximately $8 million in credits that we gave back to the business community at the beginning of the recession and through this last year. So that was certainly very helpful to the businesses to get them at least a little help in this economic environment. It is also such that it takes the burdens, again, off of small business starting up by not having to put out taxes in advance, that they it's more aligned with their federal and state taxes paying afterwards instead of doing things in advance. So that's another one. And finally, through an administrative rule that we brought to council to talk about, we have treated, well, specifically venture capital funds, but more broadly diversified investment funds better in allowing them a credit that they enjoy at the federal level, not a credit, I'm sorry, a deduction that they enjoy at the federal level, that because of the way our tax is written, they didn't have it at our level. And so by making that administrative rule and giving them that deduction, that has made it more in line with the tax at federal, state, and now the local level. So those are some of the things that, that we've done in the past couple of years. Finally, I believe council is still committed to a tiered minimum tax structure and further increasing the owner's compensation deduction up to $125,000. That hasn't been done yet, partially because of the current economic environment, but I believe you are supportive of continuing to look at that, and we will soon. So that's kind of the status of the reforms. Portland's business license tax is a business income tax, which means that the more profitable a business is, the more taxes a business will pay. That is a sound taxing principle that's followed at all levels of government. It works especially well when there are no other location alternatives. Unfortunately for Portland and Multnomah County, since our business taxes are unique in the state of Oregon, there are other location alternatives for businesses. Businesses that are highly profitable and highly mobile will consider reducing operating costs by moving out of the city and county if a significant savings from reduced taxes can be realized. The Revenue Bureau was asked to help design an incentive program to assist in the long-term retention of certain businesses in the city that appear to have a high risk of moving out of Portland. The Revenue Bureau has worked to create an incentive that was narrowly focused, simple to understand, calculate, and administer, and that uses many of the definitions that are already in our law and our rules. We also put a great deal of effort toward creating an incentive that was legally sound. The Bureau determined that the best incentive would be in the form of a tax credit. The business retention credit pilot before you today is an incentive to keep these types of businesses and the jobs they provide located in Portland. This credit requires that the business be located in Portland at the end of each tax year to qualify for the credit. Additionally, this credit is phased in for the first 4 years to encourage the business to stay in Portland. For this pilot, the investment management industry has been specifically selected due to the highly profitable and highly mobile nature of the industry, and because we have 2/3 of the firms in the region already located in Portland. Simply, let me explain how this credit works. The investment management firm will calculate their Portland business tax amount just normally and under the rules that we currently have. They will then determine the amount of the credit by subtracting from their calculated tax the greater of $6,000 per owner or 30% of the business tax that was calculated. What's left is the amount of the credit. Once the credit's been determined, there is a phase-in period for the first 2 years. Only 50% of that credit can be taken in year one. 50% of the credit can be taken in year two. And that remaining 50% in each of those years is deferred to years 3 and 4, respectively. So what that means is if a business in year 3 decided to leave, they would forfeit that deferred credit in that year 3 and that deferred credit in year 4. So it is an incentive to continue to be here, to continue to provide jobs here. In the 5th year, there's no further phase-in or deferral, but there still is the requirement that the business is located in Portland at the end of the tax year to continue to qualify for the credit thereof. Currently, investment management firms pay approximately $1.37 million to the city through the business license tax. Our analysis shows that if the credit is enacted, these firms will pay approximately $567,000 in taxes to the city, which is a 58% reduction in their overall tax burden. that's certainly significant enough and should provide incentive to retain and keep jobs here. I would like to thank specifically Scott Carter, who's our audit supervisor, who's done a tremendous amount of analysis and work on the code provisions for here on this project. And I'm happy to answer any technical questions, either about this credit proposal or our business license tax itself. Thank you.
So we've identified, and this is not science, but we've identified there are about 30 wealth management firms in
the region.
And how many of those are in the city of Portland?
That we've identified 20.
So our goal, the reason this is a pilot, is to test whether or not we can meet our goal with this tool to bring more of the 10 that are in the region but outside the city into the city.
Yes. And keep the 20 that are here.
And to keep the 20 that are here, absolutely. Unless there's additional council discussion, we've got a few people that want to testify. Thank you, Terry. Could we have Martin Medeiros and Jeff Curtis and Peter Andrews please come forward? I think the council knows, but for the three people watching on cable, Martin has served, and are you still the co-chair of SBAC?
I am the chairman.
Chairman of SBAC. He's consolidated his power. He's the chair of the Small Business Advisory Committee that has been creatively relentless in their pursuit of improving our business climate, and I wanted this this proposal was passed through the SBAC, and I wanted to get your thoughts on the matter.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mayor and Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Martin Medeiros. I am, as stated, Chairman of the Small Business Advisory Council. More importantly, I speak to you today and as a role of a small business owner and as someone who wants my kids to have a job here if they so choose to stay in the area. Right now, what's before us today is essentially emergency. We have a business flight. So my training as an Eagle Scout has taught me arterial bleeding, apply direct pressure, and in some cases you put on a tourniquet. SBAC has not taken a position on this because of the because we find that it is a tourniquet. So they've taken no position. The issue is we have got to get the patient into a care facility, and we need to give them something to keep them going on. Part of that is capital. That's what we're talking about today, access to capital. Capital is difficult. Once stabilized, we want to go on, and we want to apply this pilot, this tool. It will work. It's worked in other cities, to the 45,000 other businesses in this town who create the jobs that we enjoy. At 12% unemployment, the patient's sick. Let's get them stabilized. Beyond today, we want to see the personal exemption to go to 125,000. Adjusted for inflation, I've looked at figures that should actually be at 225,000. It was intended as a rich person's tax. It has been, thanks to the work of Terry and Mr. Carter, awesome work on looking at these things critically. Well, how does the tax actually apply? We want jobs here. We want businesses here. And jokingly, we are called the city of, you know, baristas, bicycles, and beggars. There's one more B, and that's business. No joke. City business must thrive to have all the things we like. A clean environment, very capital intensive. Adequate social programs, very capital intensive. One of your best social programs is a job. This addresses employers, the personal exemption to 125K. Hopefully in the next few months we'll get that through. And a process that looks at what is the economic impact. This is great work. We need to springboard this into really creating this vibrant economy in this city. We want the city of Portland, to be the city that works for business. I thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Martin. Mr. Curtis.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak and in support of the proposed ordinance. My name is Jeff Curtis, and I'm one of the owners of Tide Capital Management, and we're one of the firms that would benefit from this proposed ordinance. I've worked in the city of Portland for over 25 years. We started our firm a little over 5 years ago, located just across the street. I echo the comments of Martin, who I've never met before, in terms of the efforts to try to support business in Portland. Frankly, that's why I'm here, and that's why I've been fighting for this proposed ordinance, because I think it's going to be a strong step positive for the city. We believe that passing this will retain very high-paying taxpayers in the city of Multnomah County, and we also think that it will encourage similar firms to locate or relocate their businesses back into the Portland area. This county and city tax is a very complicated tax. It impacts companies differently depending on a variety of factors, such as what type of business you're in, how much work do you actually perform in the city, whether you make what you sell or provide services to the company that makes what you sell, and lastly, how are you organized? What is the structure of your firm, and how is your shareholder base? All those things can impact this tax. One of the ironic features of it is that a firm that does exactly what our firm does, but is not employee-owned, is owned by an entity or someone that's located outside the city or the county, or outside the state of Oregon, for that matter, pays substantially less tax than we do. A firm that is owned by its employees who live and work right here in this area, in the downtown area. Another issue that's important, at least with respect to the firms that are under this ordinance, is that and other firms where the assets ride the elevator every day. And in a firm like ours, all of the money that we make in our firm goes to the employees either as compensation or goes to those employees as shareholders of the firm. And so that because of the owner compensation add-back rules, this tax is more of a tax on our revenue than it is on our net income. And as some studies have shown, and as Terry, I've worked with her in terms of some of these statistics, there are some firms that are paying in the neighborhood of 50 to 100 times what the average firm is in our own business class, which is professional business services. And that's a substantial amount, obviously. For many of these reasons, I think that we all are pretty aware, but many investment management firms have either moved or establishes their business outside the area. And they've done that to avoid this tax, which they don't have to pay, which is 5 miles away from this meeting right here if their office is located. This is a perfectly sound decision, I think, particularly for a firm that's highly mobile and can perform their work anywhere, assuming that they have the correct communication systems, which is what we need. For this reason, many of these firms have moved, and we've seen buildings sprout up right outside of our city and county lines on Barnes Road and Greenberg Road and Cruz Way. That's why those buildings are there and why they've been populated. For those of us who have supported Portland and been here for, you know, over a quarter of a century, this has been a very, very frustrating situation watching that flight. The genesis of my support for this is not only on a personal level, because obviously my firm would benefit from this, but also it's to stop this continued exodus of firms to the suburbs. I think that it's very important for the city. We as a firm believe in the city. We want to support the city's efforts to be one of the best cities in this country. We think that a component of doing that is to lower the unemployment rate and have jobs and to support pro-business policies, and we think that this ordinance makes a step in that direction. This ordinance is not a tax credit that allows firms to avoid paying taxes. That is not what this particular credit is about. To the contrary, qualifying firms, the firms that would take the benefit of this, will still be significant high-paying taxpayers to the city and to the county. But in our minds, this ordinance strikes a proper balance between allowing companies to make a business decision to stay in the city, and yet at the same time allows the city and the county to retain those taxpayers that will continue to pay a very high level of tax, including ourselves. In our mind, that is the proverbial win-win situation, and that's what we think that this credit does. In conclusion, the retention of these types of firms has a very positive impact on the city. And there's several reasons. First, they provide very high-paying jobs, which I think is helpful for the city and helps enhance the support of some of the services. Second, firms like ours are economic multipliers. We help enhance the overall Portland economy by generating income for many other different types of firms, firms such as restaurants, hotels, car companies, retail shops, and many others. There are hundreds of firms and their executives who visit our offices every day right across the street from this building. And each one of those firms, if as firms like ours relocate, all of those companies and all of those executives end up going to the suburbs instead. And we think that's a negative, obviously. Third, firms like ours, we're very fortunate. I mean, this is a high-quality problem that we have, but we pay a significantly high amount of tax. And that is good for the city and the county. We need higher-paying taxpayers to help subsidize the lower and lesser-paying taxpayer. That's the way the world works, and that's a positive. And then lastly, the owners and the employees of these firms are significant supporters of the community, of the arts, and our local government activities. And that's obviously a positive in helping the city be a strong city. And thank you very much. And if there's any questions, I can answer that.
Thank you, sir. Peter.
Yes. Peter Andrews. I'm a broker for Melvin Mark Brokerage Company. I'm just going to speak more to the number of firms that are out there and what they're looking at. I'm both familiar with and have worked with a number of investment management firms. The existing business license tax is unfairly affects these truly mobile and locally owned businesses. When it comes time to evaluate somebody's lease and location, the fact that the city is unfairly taxing them, it's a quite an easy decision for them to look in other jurisdictions. I think Jeff touched on that, and I think what they've come up with is more than fair. This will undoubtedly assist us in retaining people within the city. And when analyzing the leases, it will, again, assist us in looking at the city of Portland for more of these investment management firms. So I appreciate the work on this, and I think it will help in moving this forward.
So your job is to go out there and get some of those 10-plus firms in the city?
Absolutely. I think there'll be more than just me.
All right. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Doug, if we could hear from Doug Johnson and Sandy McDonough.
I'd remind you, Mayor, it's afternoon.
Yes. This will be it.
This will be it and what?
We have two more people to testify on this matter. Then we have two more items before the City Council, and then we're actually one more subject before the City Council.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Doug Johansson. I'm one of the owners of Vista Capital Partners, one of the firms located outside the city of Portland. We currently manage money for high net worth clients, meet the definition of an investment advisory firm impacted by this tax. We have about 250 clients that visit our office once or more often twice a year. So a lot of visits that would create a lot of business for downtown Portland if we were located here. When we had to make this decision 8 years ago when we started our firm, where to locate, the tax was certainly played a big factor in our decision to locate on Barnes Road in the Peter Court Center, where we were 5 miles from downtown Portland, but weren't going to be subject to what is now a fairly onerous tax. If this ordinance were passed, I think it would certainly go a long way towards neutralizing any tax issues involved with the decision as to where to locate.
So you'll come back?
I'm just digesting this change, possible change, but it's certainly a possibility.
We got some great space.
Fantastic. And a great mayor.
And a great mayor. Thank you. And council. Thank you for
that. On that, we agree.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Sandy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm Sandra McDonough, president of the Portland Business Alliance, and I'm here today to support the proposed business retention and recruitment credit. We appreciate your support for this pilot program, and I particularly want to recognize Kimberly Schneider in the mayor's office and Terry Williams and Scott Carter for the revenue department for their work on this proposal. It's been a very complex process, and they've done a great job of making sure they've been very fair to everybody. As you've heard, this credit is designed to deal with a problem faced by a small number of locally owned capital management firms that pay an exceptionally high business license tax due to their ownership structure, the small number of shareholders, and their sole location within the city of Portland. We support the ordinance as part of the city's ongoing effort to create greater fairness in our business license tax structure, and I want to thank you for all that you've done to date and your commitment to continue doing that for our businesses, and particularly our small businesses. Even with this retention credit, these wealth management firms will continue to pay significant business license taxes, substantially more than the average business and still above the average per employee taxes paid by other professional service businesses in the city. We believe that the ordinance is narrowly crafted in a way that specifically and exclusively addresses the inequities of the business license tax structure for these small, locally owned, highly mobile, and high-value firms. At the same time, we also think it's very important that the ordinance renews the city's commitment to restoring business license tax relief for locally owned companies and other professional services firms by increasing the owner's comp deduction to $125,000 over time. We're confident that this business license tax credit will help us keep great firms in our city and bring some more back, and I'll also be working on that with you. Thank you for considering that today.
Thank you all very much. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter? Moves to a second reading.
If I could, Mayor.
Yeah, of course.
We move on, make some comments, given that you guys go back to your chairs.
Thank you.
I have serious doubts about this proposal. My good friend Martin Medeiros has already left. is one of my favorite folks in the business community, not because we always agree, but because we have vigorous discussions that are always subject oriented, and I've grown to very much admire Martin and like him. But he used an analogy here today, wherein he said, as an Eagle Scout, he learned that when you have arterial bleeding, you apply a tourniquet if need be to stop bleeding. I would remind Martin that in his medical training, that would not apply to a profuse bleeding from the neck, because if you applied a tourniquet to bleeding from the neck, you would certainly stop the bleeding, but you would create other quite fatal conditions for the patient. And I mean that this way. Portland is a community. It is a great city. And along with that comes amenities you will not find on Cruise Way or other places. And frankly, some of the testimony here didn't help me at all. It set me back a little bit. Having suffered through Measure 5 in 1990 as a leader of firefighters, and then entering the legislature in 93, serving until I arrived here in 2002, I frankly got fed up with the whining about what people pay in taxes as our public schools decimated and crumbled, as our universities became overcrowded and kids had to pay higher and higher tuition, as our community colleges became less and less affordable. And frankly, it turns me off a lot to hear people who are doing quite well say that they're just being killed by taxes. You don't get something for nothing. Portland doesn't create what it does for nothing. You have to pay something to be here. And what you get in return is a soul. If you move to Cruise Way, the bad news is you have to do business on Cruise Way. I would argue that while maybe at some point in its future it too will have a soul, it certainly doesn't have a soul that compares with the city of Portland, and particularly our vibrant downtown area and all of the work that we've done and the atmosphere we've created for employees, customers, and yes, investment bankers as well. You know, if you wanted to continue the logic to its ultimate end, that is, investment companies don't need to be in any certain place in order to do their business, you can get a heck of a deal in a building in downtown Detroit, Michigan right now. Just about have them give it to you. But I would guess that you would probably not want to go with the quality of life that comes with that as well. And while I'm probably betraying how I would vote if I were just voting up or down based on my own sensibilities of right and wrong, I give great deference to the mayor in crafting middle grounds and trying to do what he thinks is in the city's best interest. And this next week, I need to have a conversation with the mayor and have him more fully explain to me that why this continuing insane effort on the part of people in general, and I'm not focusing just on who are here today, but since 1990 till now, has taken the Oregon that I grew up in, that my ancestors immigrated to, in two prior centuries is being reduced to its knees by people who completely who find nothing good but any effort there is to somehow reduce their taxes, because they may not have kids in school or they may not have the kinds of investments personally that those of us who consider ourselves Oregonians do. So I may or may not vote for this, but I will tell you in future council sessions when people come in here and start complaining about how much money they can't make being in the city of Portland, it falls on deaf ears. It does not, and you don't have a chance to respond. You got to say your piece. I get to say mine. And I think this is a community that deserves people who want to be here, who happen to do well, and when they characterize that they are doing well, and, oh, they're helping out the little poor people because we're doing so well by subsidizing your services, turns me off. So I better probably stop there.
Thank you. Commissioner, any other comments?
I would just like to comment that I had a thorough briefing from Mr. Curtis and other investment bankers and did not, I certainly understand their commitment to staying in Portland and that the reason that this program is set up as a pilot project is to make sure that that happens and that part of the incentive, if we don't have any taxes at all, then that's not as good as the program that's being set up right now. So the folks who are in Portland right now have been committed to being in Portland for a long time and are trying to find a way to do that while still being fair to their shareholders and to the citizens of Portland. And the way that the business tax is, this particular tax is set up, it does seem to me compelling that this particular type of industry gets a disproportionate hit that needs to be addressed. And so when we do these kinds of things, it's important to constantly look at them again, and we've made some tweaks, and I like the way the mayor has set this up as a pilot program so we can see if it works.
I would just like to, you know, again, thank the mayor for crafting this proposal. I think that the city council has been committed to a long-term course of correcting some aspects of our business income tax. And as Terry mentioned, those reforms that we've made to date, we have to continue to recognize, and I think what the beauty of this proposal is, first of all, it came from locally owned, employee-owned companies who, when you look at the facts, are paying a very disproportionately high business tax per principal. And, you know, since Cruiseway or Barnes Road or other places, we compete with them for Class A offices. We have the nucleus of venture capital investment management firms that want to stay in Portland but can't ignore some of the real, realities of the commercial real estate market. And while I agree with Commissioner Leonard, I don't think Cruiseway has the soul or Barnes Rose did either, but I think we, that doesn't necessarily make up for the huge disadvantage that these firms are in. And I think this five-year pilot is both innovative and designed to keep jobs and bring back jobs to Portland. So I will be supporting this next week.
Mayor, I'll defer on my comments out of respect for the people waiting to be heard within the remaining 10 minutes of our council session.
Well, we have more than 10 minutes, Commissioner Fish, but I just want to say I think that Commissioner Leonard's comments are important in that it's easy during the depth of this recession to let that frustration get out of hand with overly heated sort of rhetoric about the vulnerabilities of Portland's business climate. And we are constantly seeking to improve our business climate. Some of us up here, more than myself, have been working at it long before there was the current Great Recession. And we are constantly looking at calibrating every aspect of our operations, including taxes, for when we see a cost, the total cost and benefit to it within the business climate, when something gets appears to be getting out of whack, we've been willing to tackle it, whether it's the exemption for the startup and small businesses, whether it's the owner's compensation deduction that will take an increase in business taxes, whether it's moving from a fee to a tax that saved $8 million, whether it's the changes to the tax that brought in real estate certain owners of real estate to being taxpayers for the first time in 25 years, whether it's making the changes that, similar to this, helps venture capital firms stay within the city of Portland. We're constantly looking to calibrate. We're constantly looking to look at all the combined cost and benefits of Portland's business climate. Taxes are one piece of that, and looking to calibrate and recalibrate where necessary. And that's what this is about. I think Martin, who I agree with Commissioner Leonard, is a good guy, clearly has no malicious intent with his comments. I think he's acting out of, I think his comments and the heat behind his comments, I know is out of frustration, just from the overall state of the economy, not just here in the city of Portland, but across the nation. So this moves to a second reading in 2 weeks. All right, last two items on the city council. Carla, can you please read their title?
Read them together. Items 1517, authorize intergovernmental agreement with the State of Oregon Department of Corrections to provide work crews to Portland Parks and Recreation through the Inmate Work Program. And 1518, authorize intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide alternative community service crews to Portland Parks and Recreation.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Eileen Argentina, would you come forward? And as you're coming forward, I'm going to make just some very brief introductory comments. Colleagues, today I bring before you two ordinances to renew intergovernmental agreements with the State of Oregon Department of Corrections and with Multnomah County. These contracts allow Portland Parks and Rec to continue using non-bargaining unit work teams for unskilled labor across the parks system for tasks that are seasonal or cannot currently be covered by the city's workforce. In the preparation of these ordinances, we've worked closely with our friends in labor to assure them that these work teams will have no impact on existing skilled labor positions. These contracts specify that Portland Parks and Rec use minimum security prisoners or community service laborers. They are supervised by trained personnel from corrections and from the county, and city personnel are trained on how to use and interact with these work teams. Until, and certainly it's a goal that I share, until Portland Parks and Rec funding can be increased to a level that allows us to do all of the work that we need to with proper funding, these agreements maximize taxpayer value while providing social benefits to many of the individuals covered in the work teams. Eileen is here from Parks to give a little more background on both agreements, and then we welcome your comments. And we have two representatives here, one from the Department of Corrections and one from the county, if my colleagues have questions they'd like answered. Eileen, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Eileen Argentina, Services Manager for Portland Parks and Recreation. And real quickly, I just wanted to share some background on this. These work crews allow PP&R staff to provide coverage of the system's seasonal and ad hoc maintenance needs, which our current city workforce would not be able to cover successfully. In 2008 and 2009, by way of just some scale, PP&R used approximately 135 work crews of about 10 corrections inmates per crew who had the privilege, earned the privilege of, and volunteered for work release, and totaled about 11,000 hours in the field. This number has decreased over the past few years as we've settled on the best use of these crews. In the same fiscal year period, PP&R used about 5,000 work hours of court-mandated community service workers. This number has increased somewhat over the past few years as individuals have chosen, where possible, community service over jail time and in lieu of fines more frequently. We use work crews throughout the PP&R system in developed areas, developed parks, on trails, and in natural areas. Community service workers are used additionally in other ways, such as handing out playbills at summer concerts and working with planting crews. Let me give you a brief picture of the type of work that the CRCI crews focus on: a leaf pickup in the fall, homeless camp cleanup, this is year-round, but particularly in the summer, storm damage cleanup, usually in the winter, but it can occur in other seasons. Gravel and bark spreading, particularly in the spring, again, can be year-round, and ditch digging for irrigation, installation, or repair also can be year-round. Our city employees do provide the training for use of these community service and CRCI work crews, both in terms of rules of conduct between staff and workers, as well as instructions about the work assigned. And as the commissioner mentioned, we have worked with our labor partners to clearly define the work to be done by these crews. And they are supervised directly by CRCI and ACS, Alternative Community Service trained supervisors. During the month of October, we've not had the use of the crews. The contracts expired at the end of September. The leaves are currently falling fast, and we hope to resume our use of these work crews immediately upon your approval of these ordinances. Thank you very much.
Questions from council? I have a couple.
Okay.
What types of offenses are the prisoners doing time for?
Understanding these are typically lower level offenses, but I'd have to defer that question to the gentleman from the Department of Corrections.
Could Dave Conway come forward from the Department of Corrections? And Gerard Welch from the county. Why don't you come forward in case there's a question directed at you?
Thank you for being here and for waiting through this long session.
Thank you, Commissioners. Dave Conway, Operations Manager for Department of Corrections at Columbia River Correctional Institution in Northeast Portland. I told them I'm here on good behavior. They let me out today, so I've got to report back
you,
right
you
after
you talk
this.
Like that all the time at home and with your family.
Well, let me answer your question conversely. First of all, the inmates that come into our system through Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, they're intensely screened, mental health, physical health, their particular needs, and then they're assigned to one of our 14 prisons throughout the state. And we at Columbia River have the lower level inmates. The inmates.
What kind of offenses are we talking about?
The inmates that go out on these work crews, we do not allow inmates with any type of sex offenses, escapes, restraining orders, arson offenses, or stalking histories, or any other types of violent crimes. We have really strict criteria we use, and in addition to that, we have a real stable workforce. The inmates at Columbia River are typically there up to 3 or 4 years. And so we actually get to know these guys too. And so there's a constant evaluation process that goes on, and we basically pick the cream of the crop to go out there.
I think the question was, what type of offenses did they
suffer? He answered that.
He said what they weren't.
What they weren't. What they were. Everything else. Everything
what
else.
Is that?
Robbery. I'm looking at my list of what we don't allow. So every other type of crime could potentially
be allowed. Somebody that was convicted of robbery would be allowed?
They could be, yes, depending on certain.
So just get off the top of your head, four. Robbery, burglary?
Yes. Robbery, burglary.
DUI?
Yes.
Drug offenses?
Some, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. And are they all men or are there men and women on these crews?
The Columbia River is strictly male offenders at our facility.
Are there any women that are involved in this program?
We only contract with Columbia River Correctional Institute for inmate crews.
And why is that?
You know, it's a limited application of this resource, and we've got a working arrangement. We know what their procedures are. So
is there any element of job training in this program?
Well, there is. You know, we feel we're doing not only a service to the community, but to the inmates themselves. I like to remind folks that when these guys get out of prison, they're going to be our neighbors. And therefore, you know, we make every effort to give these guys the skills that they need necessary to make it in the community once they get out. So you may look at a job like picking up leaves and say to yourself, well, what? Come on, there's no real skill involved in that. But behind the scenes, an inmate has to get up on time every morning, take a shower. We instill teamwork, you know, so these guys have to work together to get this job done. And it's about their brief chance to get out into the community and interact with community members and leaders of Portland Park.
May I just ask a follow-up question because it prompts a question in my mind for Eileen. Have we hired any individuals who have been part of this program or do we know whether any of these individuals, when released to society, have ever applied for a position with PPNR?
I don't know of specific issues. I know through the community service program, because we often have lengthier commitments from them, there have been cases where they have been able to develop, you know, the skills to be competitive for our positions.
How long have we been doing this program?
We've been doing the alternative community service, that's the community service crew, since I think 1984, and since approximately 2003 for the inmate crews.
Have we done any kind of follow-up on the people who've been involved?
We haven't, on the individuals.
And going back to my previous line of questioning regarding the job training aspect, are people going out just once to rake leaves and then that's it, or do they go out multiple times and learn various different skills?
They do. They do. They go out, as I mentioned before, we carefully screen these guys. And so if you could imagine, the prison itself is kind of like its own community, and so we have a kitchen and we have a maintenance shop, and there's all types of different jobs these guys do. So the guys who are screened to go out on these work crews, we like to keep them there as long as they're performing properly, and they're rated every day, and we have obviously a trained supervisor who's watching them and rates them on a daily basis. They're scored. It's kind of a pass-fail. And